If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live on SiriusXM Channel 111 every weekday at noon East.
Hey everyone, I'm Megyn Kelly. Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show. Hope you had a good weekend. Today, it seems like all anyone can talk about is this. Leaping and hopping on a moon shadow. Yes, that's better than total eclipse of the heart. All anyone can talk about is the solar eclipse, and we are part of it. Are you, to get all nerdy for a minute, in the path of totality? It's a whole thing, so we're going to have to get into it. Plus, we'll bring you former President Trump's big announcement on, quote, abortion rights this morning. Just that term is getting him some blowback from the right. And new reporting on his potential VP selection. Is he getting closer? We have a name. We'll tell you what the speculation is. Joining me now for the full show, our friends Stu Bergier, host of Blaze TV's Stu Does America, and Dave Marcus, columnist for Daily Mail, Fox News, and other outlets.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Stu and Dave, are you ready? Are you ready for the darkness?
Oh, yeah. I'm in the path of totality, Megyn. I've got the fancy glasses right here. Pop them on at any time. I'm ready to go.
Can't see anything. I mean, when you have them on inside, you literally cannot see anything. I think they're going to do some better things outside when you're actually looking at the sun.
I'm just going to look at it like Trump did. I think it's fine.
Did you make a thing out of the one we went through in 17?
No.
I remember it coming and not really thinking it was that big of a deal, and then realizing it apparently had never happened in my entire life. And I guess it is a pretty cool thing. I remember seeing the little crescent shadows that year. You could see from, which is really, really strange. It's definitely a cool thing. My kids are fascinated by it. I mean, they were excited to get the glasses. They were looking at the sun today before the eclipse with the glasses on, which, you know, it's the only way you should really ever look at the sun. It is pretty amazing. But my big prediction for it is I think it's going to get slightly darker for about 4 minutes, and then it's going to pass.
I feel like
Path of Totality sounds like a 1970s cult, like the Path of Totality, not one of the suicidal ones, but sort of like back to nature, and don't get your hair cut.
Kool-Aid, but there might be like group sex going on.
Yes.
Something weird. That's your path.
Yes.
Abby and I and a gal who worked for me, Emily Jeffers, we all did the eclipse on the top of the NBC building, wasn't it, Abby? Do we remember? Were we excited by the eclipse? I can't remember. There we are. Well, I mean, look at Abby really leaning in. She's like the head fully back there taking in the eclipse. I don't remember. My kids, they watched it with their Nana out at the beach. I don't remember being blown away by it, but I do think it's important to like make it a thing. I love just the thought of like this connection where the whole nation gets together and gets excited about something. And then we all talk about it, whether it's a huge sporting event or an eclipse, or, you know, in a couple of years, we're going to have the country's 250th anniversary, but it's our birthday is coming up 250th. That's big. We should all be doing. I like the idea of like, it's a thing. The nation comes together for it.
It's good that so far we haven't been divided by it. I mean, nobody's called the eclipse racist yet on social media. I mean, it might come, but so far, I'm all for that.
It's only white privilege that allows people to enjoy, you know, while other people are suffering around the world, white privilege allows people to enjoy.
Like
yeah,
you, there Mr. you go. Totality down in there in Texas with all your white privilege. So you, do you are you just going to go like in your backyard, Stu, to get the whole, because I do think it's cool to see the total eclipse.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of into it. I mean, I'm going to be in the middle of a taping when that happens, and I'm just going to stop the taping and walk outside. Yeah. Like, I want to see it. I did buy the stupid glasses. I've got them on. My kids are, you know, get a period of school. They're all taking out and walking outside. And like the scene, I will say the scene around here is a little strange. I mean, thousands and thousands of people are coming into the path. And we're in Dallas. So it's, you know, it's a lot of people who are traveling here to see it. And everybody, I haven't been out in a while, but the clouds were gathering this morning. It was clear all weekend. Uh-oh. And the clouds were gathering. The predictions are it's going to be too cloudy to really see anything, which there's a hotel around here that was charging $3,600 a night for people to come into town to watch the eclipse. And then they're very likely going to be staring at the bottom of a bunch of clouds. So
that's
I don't know. There's something
nightmare.
Revealing about that.
Oh, no.
We're only supposed to get 90%.
We're in Connecticut. We could have driven 5 hours to northern Vermont to have seen the total thing in Burlington, but we didn't. We have to do the show. The kids have school, but we are going to, I'm pulling them out of school just a little early, just like a half an hour. They're going to miss like after school sports, basically, so that we can watch it together. And I think we're in Connecticut, we're going to get 92% blockout, which is, I realize it's not total. There was a guy on the Daily this morning, the New York Times podcast, really shaming those of us who are settling for less on totality. We're going to do what we can. I don't know. What about you, Dave? You're in West Virginia, right? Where are you guys
going? Yeah, we're getting like 89%. I was talking to one guy at 7-Eleven today who, I mean, he was very excited. I was a little surprised, which is funny because this is like the second time that I've been surprised at 7-Eleven by a guy being excited. Because the other night there was a guy who was like super excited about the women's basketball game. And I'm like, what's going on at the 7-Eleven now? It's all about like women's basketball and like solar phenomenon. But he was very excited. I would think what I might do if I remember, maybe I'll set an alarm now that I think about it. If I remember, I might put my cat on the back deck to like see if she freaks out. I think she probably won't because it's not really her nature.
Protect the cat. What's the cat's name? You told me about this on Twitter.
Bagheera.
Exchange.
Bagheera.
Yes,
my
that's
cat
right.
is Bagheera.
Protect
Bagheera. Protect her from what?
Well, look here. You mentioned Trump from this. Here's this video from 2017. There he is. Look.
Yeah.
Look. No.
It's fine. Well,
there's Melania with the proper, well, at least some sort of now he's got the protective lenses on. This is the way to look at it through the glasses, not just straight up. Do not go the first way with Bagheera.
All right. I'll let you know how it goes.
I thought one of the interesting things on the eclipse was to figure out how much to terrify my children about staring at the sun, because I was like, you don't want them to look and ruin their eyes, but probably, I mean, you saw what Trump did. Probably that's not going to do much of anything. I doubt his vision is any worse from what he did there. But I did build it up to my kids that basically their eyes are going to burn out of their skulls if they looked at it for just a second to try to terrify them into the correct behavior. I don't know if that's good parenting or bad parenting, but it's what I went with.
I don't, like, they say, first of all, if you damage your eyes, it's permanent. Like the cells that will be damaged don't come back. That's serious. But is it worse than just looking at the sun on a regular day? Like, I thought the damage is, like, we all know you're not supposed to look at the sun. It's extremely powerful and hurts your eyes. But like, is it especially bad the day of an eclipse? Or is it just that you're more tempted to linger because something really cool is happening up there?
Yeah, I think it doesn't hurt, right? So it doesn't, like, you don't shy away. And I think also your eyeballs open up when it gets dark to try to gather in more. So I think that affects it as well. As you can tell, I'm pretty much a scientist on this. So you can definitely take that
to the
bank.
Dr. Stu, I have a question.
Yes.
So Dr. Stu, prior to the invention of these plastic glasses that allow us to witness a solar eclipse, how did human beings for thousands of years know about solar eclipses without everybody having gone blind?
Dave, they all thought the world was ending. That's what happened. They all were standing there in the middle of the day.
But they didn't go blind.
Because they were running for their lives. That's what was happening.
Yes.
We look back at these poor people thousands of years ago, and they're like, oh, I can't believe they thought the world was ending. Of course they did. That's what I would have thought, too. It just got dark in the middle of the day for no reason. That's what I would think.
They thought it was end of days. Well, here is what you can actually expect. This is courtesy, again, of the New York Times, the Daily Podcast Today, which featured Mr. Eclipse Fred Espinac, retired astrophysicist and eclipse chaser. Watch this.
Maybe about a minute before the total eclipse began, we noticed strange patterns on the ground beneath us, on the grassy field that we were on. These ripples racing across the field. And these are something called shadow bands. They look a lot like the rippling patterns that you would see on the bottom of a swimming pool. Bands of light and dark, and moving very quickly across the ground. And along one edge of the moon is this bright bead of sunlight, because that's the last remaining piece of the sun before it becomes total. And this is the diamond ring effect, because you've got the ring of the corona. When you see this all transpire, you can easily understand how people thought this was the end of the world, because it seems far outside of the realms of nature. It seems supernatural. I think it's a sense of belonging to this incredible universe, both belonging and a humbleness.
I like that. That's something we can all relate to, and that taps into my own reasons for watching it too. I don't know if we're going to get exactly the same sensation we partial eclipse people, but it's a cool thing to think about. I'll tell you this too. Astrology from the magazine Astrology. This is actually from the magazine The Cut, but it's about astrology. For literally thousands of years, eclipses have portended large-scale metamorphosis, status quo shakedowns, shifts in authority and power, and collective transformation. The eclipse could be a sign that Donald Trump is going to win. Shifts in authority and power and collective transformation. They say astrologers believe that eclipses have the power to change the course of history, that events that coincide with eclipses are literally written in the stars, and none other than Donald Trump is taking advantage of that very possibility with his own eclipse-themed election ad, which has made Canadian Debbie laugh harder than anything we've seen on this show in recent history. Take a look. It's the most important moment with a sun. Profile of Donald Trump. We will save America. You tell me, Dave Marcus, I saw that and I said to my team, this is why he's going to win.
It's a very good ad. That was also a very good segment from the Daily. I'm going to, as soon as we get the break, I'm texting the guys at Morning Wire. Like, I want background music. That was an impressive segment.
Right?
I really liked.
They did a nice
they
job.
Liked all of that.
I have to give kudos.
Yeah, they do a great job. I mean, look, yeah, no, you're right. I mean, look, Trump's a lot of fun. He knew he had this moment from the last time, and I'm sure he knew when he did it the last time that everybody was going to jump on social media and be like, he looked, yeah. No, it's good. It's fun. And I think that as long as that's what Trump is doing and he's not, like, you know, aggressively attacking people, he's in a better place and he feels like he's winning. And I think we are seeing fun-loving Trump.
Here's the other thing, Stu. This magazine article goes on to say, eclipses are known to speed up time by perpetuating the inevitable. I don't know what that means. Perpetuating the inevitable. In other words, whatever was going to happen eventually, for example, breaking up, moving to a new city, starting a different career path, will be expedited during an eclipse. Don't be surprised if major life-changing milestones and all the corresponding drama are piling up right now. Eclipse season chaos is a very real phenomenon. So it, wait a minute, it expedites what was going to happen eventually. And at the same time, it allows major life-changing milestones to pile up. This is incongruous and why I don't normally read the magazine, The Cut. But basically anything that happens in your life over the next 2 months, you can blame it on the eclipse. That's how I read it still.
Oh, perfect. That's a free rein to do whatever you want, I guess. I'm more predicting just, you know, the darkness part. I think that's going to happen. All the other stuff associated with it. I had a friend of mine who came to me. He's like, hey, my wife came home and she said, you know, I heard there's a lot of weird stuff that's going to happen with this eclipse. You know, I something with demons or something. Well, what do you think about that? It's like, why do you think I'm the guy who's going to know what demons are doing? Like that, what does that say about our friendship? I have no insight as to what demons may do. I do think that it is an interesting thing, and this might relate
ask
to the
Glenn.
Way the left see. Yeah, Glenn may know. Glenn may know what demons
Glenn knows.
Are. We'll ask him. He always knows. if they see Donald Trump as a demon, and the fact is that he seems to have a much more competent election, you know, campaign staff than he's had in previous elections. Some people that are kind of leaning into his persona a little bit more. If you kind of remember the 2016 election, it was all these like weird user created videos that kind of floated around and really led to the popularity. Everybody around him was, you know, no one was really professional. It was like it was a bootstrapped operation in 2016. I'd be scared if I were on the left seeing the operation today. It's a combination of the good things that Trump does kind of on his own, along with some of the professionalism that wasn't really there in 2016. And, you know, he won in 2016. So, you know, seeing stuff like this where they're leaning into the fun of Donald Trump instead of just the, you know, the sort of dark warnings that he sometimes gives, I think is in a period like this where people are sort of worn down by these past 3 years of Biden, I think it's a good approach and it's one that might be successful.
Completely agree. This is Biden doesn't get it and can't do it, even if he did get it. Donald Trump's natural sense of humor is a huge asset to him. And it's why, in particular, he's doing better, I think, right now. We'll get into this in just a bit, with young voters. Not all that, but in part, I think it's mostly economically driven. But his sense of humor also reinforces a sense of vibrancy, which works well against this sitting president. But I want to pick up on what you said about the Dem freak out, because it's in full force already. We got 7 months to go, but it's in full force because the polling is very good for Donald Trump. Not universally, but pretty much almost universally. When Rachel Maddow was having her 27-minute meltdown about Ronna McDaniel 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago, she was saying how dire the circumstances, because according to the polls, Donald Trump is going to be the next president. Even she admits it. And that brings me to an actress who most people may not even know, but her hysteria is proof of the thing you just said, Stu. I knew this actress from What's Love Got to Do with It? The great biopic about Tina Turner's life based on her book, I, Tina. And this actress played Tina Turner's mother in the movie. Remember her?
I'm her mother. This Anna May's mother. Y'all believe that?
I can't believe that.
No. My goodness. What's a fine young thing like you doing with two grown daughters?
Hey, Miss Ellie. How can I help you, Mr.
Turner? Ike Turner.
I didn't pay for Hannah Mae to come all the way up here from Nutbush, Tennessee, to be wasting time with a bunch of musicians.
But wait a minute, Mom, it wasn't like that. Anna Mae.
Ellie.
But Mama,
take Anna Mae in the back. Mr. Turner. I don't know what you had in mind, but this little girl's gonna be a nurse. Bring a steady paycheck.
Great clip and great movie. And Jennifer Lewis, one N, unlike the other Jennifer, who's got two, did a great job. And now these days she's starring in the sitcom Black-ish. She's 67 years old and she is really, really upset about the prospect of Donald Trump retaking the presidency. She sat in an interview with Zerlina Maxwell, a host of the radio show Mornings with Zerlina, right here on Sirius XM. Take a listen.
then we do nothing. We sit on our couches. Oh, I don't believe in voting. You fucking idiot.
Mm.
If that man gets in, as soon as he takes the oath, he will have generals walk down the steps of the Capitol. He will take a hammer and break the glass where the Constitution is, and he will tear it up in our faces.
Mm.
And say, now, I'm the king of the fucking world. You will bow down, bitches. He will punish everybody that didn't vote for him. Let me tell y'all how I know this shit. I know it because I know what mental illness looks like.
Mm.
That's true.
That mania is unstoppable. See, this motherfucker is Hitler.
Mm.
He didn't come to play.
Very dramatic. I mean, guys, that's super dramatic and very well, you know, delivered, right? I mean, we have to admit, like, I'm scared.
Like, you know. I found it very compelling. And I love that, you know, I used to have Zerlina Maxwell on my Fox shows, but I love the response, like, he will fucking send the generals and he will tear up the Constitution and break the glass.
That was an incredible clip. It really was. And, you know, we sometimes look at the way that the left treats Trump and reacts to him. And, you know, the fact that they're trying to put him in prison, they're trying to throw him off ballots, they're doing all these things. It's because in so many people in public life, in the media, in politics, who are on the left, what you just heard is their entire internal monologue. That is exactly what is inspiring them to act the way they are. When they seem irrational, when they seem like they're doing these things, they're saying democracy is under attack and that's why we're trying to remove the other guy who's on the ballot. That sort of behavior can only come from an internal monologue just like that. And if you justify the world in those sorts of terms, of course you can really kind of justify any behavior to stop that from happening. That's a fascinating clip. I think more... First of all, hilarious, but also very, very revealing.
Yeah,
but it also makes no sense.
That's why we played it so high up.
I mean, but it's also just it's such a bizarre fantasy. I mean, the generals are gonna what generals? Like what's gonna happen? Like January 20th, Trump's gonna go to the White House. He's gonna call the Joint Chiefs of Staff and say, like, I'm the king now. I need you to march down the Capitol steps so everyone knows I'm the king. Now, I'm going to go to the National Archives. I'm going to tear the Constitution up.
Yeah.
And then I'll disband Congress. Like, what are you talking about? Like, none of this. This is like an opium fantasy. It's completely bizarre. It's a very strange thing to even talk about. But as Stu points out, they think this is going to happen. These are the same people who thought that we were 5 minutes away from losing, our democracy because QAnon Shaman, you know, stood on in the well of the Senate. It's bizarre.
Yeah. And then, but then of course she gives it up when she was like, how do I know it's going to happen? Because I know what mental illness looks like. Still, well,
she said
true.
As she proved her point. Yes, the absolute. Has there ever been a more? I did not believe a lot of the things she said in that monologue, but when she said, "I know what mental illness looked like," I believed every word of it.
It was meta. It was very meta. I was having one of those moments. So yeah, that's just a little sampling. I mean, I will say while I'm on the topic of hysterical leftist meltdowns, did you guys see? You know, Elie Mystal, who writes for The Nation. He's one of the most just angry, racist people on X. And that's saying something. And, you know, he goes on MSNBC, Joy Reid's show. She's more racist than he is. But I mean, it's a tight, tight race. He wrote this scathing opinion piece about Justice Stephen Breyer, who wrote the following. Of the Supreme Court, saying the Supreme Court I served on, he's retired, was made up of friends. And it pretty much went downhill from there, says Elie Mystel. So Breyer wrote this op-ed in the New York Times about friendship amongst the court's justices, which has always been something that I've known of since I was a law student and then a lawyer and then covered the high court for Fox for 3 years. I love this about our Supreme Court. It's an example for us all that, I mean, they are so divided ideologically and always have been. Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Justice Scalia saw absolutely nothing the same way. I mean, they're just completely different philosophies. And yet they were, if not best friends, close to best friends. They vacationed together all the time. They hung out together all the time. They respected each other's intellect. They understood they were very different ideologically, but there was kindness and respect. And I think maybe even, you know, the love of good friends there. Well, Elie Mystel's pissed about that because Justice Breyer is coming out to say, look, let me tell you something. This is like a body that we can still look up to. And this is Elie's reaction. The title of the piece is The Supreme Court I Served On Was Made Up of Friends. It pretty much went downhill from there. He says, it's about how some of the justices used to play bridge together. That's those two as well. While others went to the opera and how they would share jokes over lunch. The point of his piece, to the extent there was one, was to distract readers from their decisions and any number of horrid decisions emanating from the corrupt and broken Supreme Court and burnish the institution's reputation at a time when the people have had just enough of these justices. Talking about their low approval ratings, he says, it's our opinion that the opinion exposes the court as a partisan cabal beholden to the Republican Party or the conservative culture warriors. The Roberts Court is set on devouring the rights of women, people of color, and the LGBTQ community while preserving the rights of mass shooters to amass deadly arsenals. But Breyer wants us to know that in my 28 years on the court, I did not hear a voice raised in anger. Why the hell not? He says. Why weren't you, Steve, sitting there screaming at your conservative colleagues or asking everyone who would listen to stop your, quote, friends from hurting people? Why do you think intellectual detachment in the face of active horror is a virtue when it's more like a sin? Maybe Breyer can enjoy a night at the opera with people who think a 10-year-old girl can be raped and forced to bring the pregnancy to term as a matter of law, but I can't. Maybe Breyer should have spent less time having lunch with his conservative colleagues and more time having lunch with their victims. And just a couple more. There are a lot of people who believe that politics and policy differences can and should be ignored among colleagues and friends. They believe that the fact that one person supports, say, amnesty for migrants who are out of status, while another supports shooting them to death, should their children miraculously manage to squeeze through the razor wire barricade erected to drown them, shouldn't prevent these two people from enjoying a few beers together. The audience for Breyer's anecdotes is likely the same demographic as Breyer himself. Old, straight, white, college-educated men and people who desperately want to attain the status and prestige of old, straight, white, college-educated men. Breyer can maintain the intellectual gooberism of institutional collegiality in the face of real-world harms because those harms are not visited on him. He's not the guy the cops choked to death. He's not the immigrant being deported away from his children. He's not the woman being forced to incubate a rapist baby against their will. This is despite the fact that Breyer voted with the leftist of the left, the biggest liberal vote on the court for his entire nearly 30-year tenure. It's not good enough. Why? Because he's nice to the Republicans. He doesn't demonize them. And of course, his biggest sin, he's a, say it together, a straight, white, college-educated man. And that's really the problem for Elie Mystel. This is crazy-ass, racist, classist shit. It's fine. We know he'll get away with it. But it does show you the extent of, it's not just Trump derangement syndrome. It's like Republican derangement syndrome, Dave. It's something beyond just Trump here.
Yeah, it's hate. It's a preaching of hatred. It's preaching that if somebody disagrees with you politically, or if somebody is of a different faith, or if somebody views the world in a way that is different from the way that you view the world, you should hate them. Not just vote a different way, but you shouldn't be in their presence, right? This goes back to the taunting of Trump officials in restaurants, and don't be polite to these people, right? Like, make them be social outcasts. And I mean, it'll destroy our society. You know, you were reading that, and I was thinking back, like, the last year that I was really in theater was 2012, and I was the host of a short play series in downtown New York. And part of the bit was, and it wasn't a bit really, like, what was that I was conservative, I was a Republican, and I would have fun with the audience. This was in you know, Bowery Poetry Club. Everybody that, I mean, they weren't Democrats, they were communists, right? But we'd have fun. And after the show, we'd have interesting conversations. And it's like, well, you know, Dave, Condoleezza Rice is interesting, right? And it was okay. That seems like a million years ago to me now on all sides. I mean, it just couldn't happen today. And it's not just the left and it's not just the right. It seems like everybody has decided, like, if you don't agree with me about everything, then you're evil and I can't associate with you. And it'll destroy the country.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. I feel like this is my bread and butter, being able to talk to anybody, you know, people with whom I disagree, people with whom I do agree. And the amount of energy, Stu, in this piece, the amount of hatred toward his own side, you know, Breyer is a leftist, but he is too tolerant of conservatives. That's what's gotten him kicked out of Elie Mystal's leftist club. That plus, as I said, the reality is, if you read this guy's tweets or see his appearances on Joe Reed, the fact that Breyer's white, I'm telling you, he's a racist. I mean, he doesn't like any whites, and he really doesn't like whites who have tolerance for conservatives.
It's in perfectly on Joy Reed's program. No wonder he's on all the time. I think that, you know, part of this is, I don't know, I feel like I'm able to talk to my liberal friends about politics all the time. And, you know, I think it's really, really valuable to do that. It helps you work on, you know, not only just learn things about the other side, but also be more effective in a persuasion rather than just, you know, talking about your beliefs and yelling them at your own side and everyone cheers you. And, like, there's not that much benefit in that. I know you're in Connecticut, I think, Megan, and that's where I grew up. I grew up in Connecticut. As I developed political views, I was conservative. And I think that was really beneficial. It was interesting to live in a place that was mostly liberal while I was a conservative. It makes you sharpen your arguments, but also, you know, work on them in a totally different way. And that's what the Supreme Court's supposed to be. It's supposed to be logical arguments based on founding documents that sucks all emotion out of that conversation. It's not supposed to be emotional time, but the left must have that because the movement is completely based on it. You can't make these changes without emotion that they want to make to our entire foundation. You know, you go back to the Obama administration and it was Rahm Emanuel with the never let a crisis go to waste. That mindset fuels so much of the left. They get incremental gains in moment of emotion. And if you suck that out and you make sober arguments with people, they can't gain the way that they want to gain, or at least as quickly as they want to. I think you're right. I think it's you know, our entire system is, politics is nothing but a system to remove anger and violence out of these disagreements. We're supposed to be able to work through them in a logical way. It does feel gone in public life, but I don't feel like it's like that for normal people. I think everybody's got a friend they think is a little nutty politically, but they can come over and you can have beers with them. You can have conversations with them. You can hang.
Totally.
And they might leave and you might make fun of them with your wife or your husband afterward. But, like, that's okay. It's fun and you still think of them as a good person. That's how normal people are supposed to be.
Completely agree. And yeah. And the Supreme Court is holding the line. I'm delighted to see it in writing, though I've known it was true, given the experiences I just outlined for you, my own. And he's proud of it, too, and he should be. And I will mark money, any amount of money, that Gorsuch and Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas are getting along just fine with Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson and Sonia Sotomayor. And the people who are angry about that are universally on this, in this sliver of the bizarre far left. There is not a conservative who's upset about this. Maybe like that lunatic Nick Fuentes, although he's not a conservative. I don't know what he is, but he just doesn't like certain races. So maybe he doesn't like the fraternization. I don't know. But my point is, this is a leftist thing. where the right is completely demonized as a group and is responsible, if they want a strong border, for the murder of immigrants. That's what you want. You want them to die as they try to squeeze through the barbed wire, as opposed to, no, we're actually trying to protect our own country and maintain, you know, order here. But no, like, this is a sick sliver. And I know, Dave, I mean, clearly you, more conservative leaning on Broadway, my God, I'm sure you dealt with leftists all the time. I've got some of my dearest friends in the world, literally some, most of my dearest friends in the world are committed Democrats. One was at the BLM protests. Many were at the pussy hat pink thing, you know, with all the women in the streets. One campaigned for Joe Biden. These are not deal breakers for normal people, even though they're politics. These are not. This is a lunacy taking over part of the Democrat Party.
Well, look, I think Stu made a really important point here, which is the difference between private and public relationships, right? The example that I had just given was to a theater performance, where what I was describing was happening publicly, right, in front of a bunch of people. Now, conversely, you know, I have this experience all the time, but like this summer I went to cover the Moms for Liberty event in Philly, and oh my God, it was just so much like hatred being spewed at them from like all over the place, Philadelphia Inquirer, everybody, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, one day I had filed my story and I went to go get like tapas or something. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to these two women who are clearly Democrats. They're like, oh, you're covering this. What do you do? Who do you work for? I'm like, Fox News. They're like, oh, well, I've never met anyone for him. It was like, and we had a lovely conversation. Right. And it was totally fine because there was nothing public about this. This was not social media where their friends were going to be like, oh, my goodness, what are you doing talking to him? Right. And this happens to me time and time again when I'm on the road. And I don't know what the answer is, other than maybe for the left to stop holding these purity tests over, you know, who your friends are, because it sucks.
It's changed. I do think it's changing. It's worse now than it was 10 years ago.
Much.
I want to continue this, but I do want to tell you on the subject of Broadway, just as a quick aside. Went with the kids to Back to the Future on Friday night. Go.
My son loved it. I haven't seen it. My son saw it. He said it was great.
Irrespective of your age, your background, your politics, it's one of those shows everyone will love. No, I'm not getting paid to say this. It is brilliantly done. It's so fun. The songs are great. The sets are great. Really great. The set design is actually amazing. And the actor who plays George McFly, the dad of Marty McFly, is hysterical. He's
that's
so
a great role.
Funny. My husband does a great something. Imitation of him. I won't try it, but I'm just telling you, go. You come into New York and you're thinking about what show do I go to? You don't want to spend so much money on a miss. Go to Back to the Future. If you don't like it, call me. I'll send you a refund.
My son had an interesting point about Back to the Future, which is that, you know, there's that scene where Marty starts playing like, you know, thrasher guitar and like everybody is like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, you guys aren't ready for that yet.
But your kids are going to love it.
Yeah. But my son made the point that there's no modern equivalent of that. Right. Like, because I'm about the age where like if I went back that far, I'd be going to 1993. There's nothing I could play in 1993 that would make the people from my high school be like, oh, my God, I've never heard anything. I mean, it just doesn't exist.
True. Well, and it's interesting because there was so much change, right? Because the birth of rock and roll was in the 50s, which is the time they were going back to from 1985.
Yeah.
So there was such a dramatic change. I mean, when we were growing up, like in the 70s, that was the music you'd hear on the radio a lot of the time. You know, yes, you'd hear all these great 70s songs, which is a great era for music, but you'd hear all these 50s songs. Like we were kind of new in the era of rock and roll and this new kind of music, and
we called them oldies, Megan, and people today are kind enough not to refer to Duran Duran as an oldie.
Well, can I tell you something? So, you know, Steve Krakauer, the executive producer of this show, he's a lot younger. He just turned 40 2 weeks ago. Happy birthday, Steve. And when I said, I said, let's start the show with Moonshadow by Cat Stevens. Steve's like, I don't know what that song, I've never heard that song. I'm like, come on.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Okay, so Don Lemon. All this divisiveness brings me to Don Lemon. I am not going to make any comment on his wedding this weekend. It got a lot of press. The truth is I wish him well in his nuptials, and I hope he and his husband are happy together. However, in his new fledgling show, he had on actor D.L. Hughley, and they had a pretty extraordinary exchange right along the lines of what the three of us have been discussing. Listen here to the topic of whether you really can have relationships with people across the aisle.
I really do believe that having relationships with people and talking it out can change things.
Once not in America. Right? Not anymore.
I had a different relationship with Spike, but I think that talking things out and having conversations can help. But, you know, maybe I just learned my lesson for good. For the last and final time, God was saying, no, it doesn't work. I hope it doesn't. But why do you say not anymore in America?
Because I think they look at how strident people are.
Okay. So you can't have relationships with people across the aisle. Not anymore, at least. By the way, this guy, D.L. Hughley, came on my show on Fox News in 2016, and he was very much the same. This is not a new reveal. It's not anymore for him. Listen to him then.
The Department of Justice found that the police there had endemic racism. They found that.
Right.
But they also exonerated Officer Derrick Wilson.
That's not a.
And they found Hands Up,
something.
Don't Shoot was a
let
lie.
Let me ask you something.
And that Michael Brown was the aggressor.
Wow. Here's what I'll say.
Don't wow me.
For you all to see one thing, the only place racism doesn't exist is Fox News and the police department.
Could you hold the insults for a second so we can have a productive conversation? You were going to make the points that whites see certain incidents differently than blacks do. And we saw that in the O.J. Simpson case when the verdict came down.
Sure.
I'll give you that. Most reasonable people will give you that. But you know what shuts down all reasonable dialogue is throwing out the term racism before it's been proven. Very dangerous when you get to the point where you paint with an entire group with the same brush based on bad actions of a few.
That is amazing to hear on this network. That really is.
DL.
That really is. Amazing to hear on this network. The only place racism
Thanks for being here.
Is, thank you for having
Take care.
Same, right? Same guy. And so Lemon even bringing it up with him was false. And let's be honest, Lemon pretending that he just wants to have conversations with people and like, irrespective of their politics, you know, come together, is also a lie. He's the guy, as you guys all remember, who engaged in the most dripping with disdain and disgust for Trump voter clips of all time. I'll give you just a flavor because it's a long one. Just watch. You remember.
Donald Trump couldn't find Ukraine on a map if you had the letter U and a picture of an actual physical crane next to it. He knows that this is, you know, an administration defined by ignorance of the world.
The people who aided and abetted Trump are stupid. I've lived in several red states. There are a lot of friends who I had to really get rid of.
Credulous boomer rube demo that backs Donald Trump, that wants to think that Donald Trump's a smart one and they're y'all elitists are them.
They're taking down the statues and
crime is rising as they defund police.
Oh my gosh, it's so bad.
You voted for Trump. You voted for the person who the Klan supported. You voted for the person who Nazis support.
You elitists with your geography and your maps and your spelling, even though my
math and your reading.
If you're not going to get vaccinated, you don't want to social distance, you don't want to wear a mask, then maybe you don't want to go to the hospital when you get sick.
We have to stop demonizing people.
You get it. You get it.
Oh, God. I forgot all about... Megan, I have forgotten about the handoff between like Lemon and Cuomo and like those like 2 minutes of awfulness during.
Forgotten or blocked out?
Maybe. Oh my goodness. Yeah, maybe blocked out. Wow.
The falsity. But I'm a person, you know, I just believe in having relationships with people and talking things out, and that can really change things. Bullshit. Bullshit. You heard him say right there he had to get rid of his friends in the red states because they're so backwards. And we interspliced a few clips in there, Stu, but you heard it. You know, like those Republicans, you know, like thinking that, oh, those Democrats are those elites with their maps and their geography. And he was hysterical. Who does he think he's kidding, right? That's what happens. Ellie Mistel, I'm sure that actress Jennifer Lawrence and Don Lemon, when they get in their leftist circles, just pat themselves on the back for how tolerant they are and what bigots the people on the right are. That's the only reason they had to end every relationship with a red state person, because they're so bad. But we're still totally willing to have helpful, fruitful conversations.
I love that. I love that spin. They're always happy to have fruitful conversations as long as the fruit at the end of that conversation is what their policy desire is. As long as they will always come halfway from their point to the socialist point for a nice little convergence of opinions. Yeah, it's funny. D.L. Hughley was actually on the show when I worked at CNN with Glenn Beck back in the day, very long time ago. People don't remember this all that well, but we were on Headline News and he came on the show and I would say sort of outlined what he was talking about. The nicey, I would always talk to people across the aisle. Maybe he was that guy. Maybe something changed between 2007 and 2016. Maybe Glenn Beck was the one that screwed him up. I blame him for most
maybe
things.
Maybe it was me.
Maybe it was you. Who knows? Maybe you just set him on this path, Megan. I don't know. But I mean, it's so false. And it's like, I come back to this over and over again. If you can't keep your friends because they disagree with you on politics, then you're weird. You're bad at being a friend, right? Like
let's be honest. It's the leftists who break up with the righties. I mean, I can't think of one conservative who's dumped a leftist friend. In my experience, that just doesn't happen. It goes the other way around.
Yes. Yes. It's only when you're completely antagonized. I've had a couple of friends who have been like, hey, like, I don't want to, let's just, hey, we don't agree on politics, conservatives, and say, we don't agree on politics. I love you, but like, we just don't agree on this stuff. Let's just flesh it out of our lives. Let's just not talk about that. Let's talk about the things we like agreeing with. And over and over again, it's the liberals who say, no, we must talk about this. It's too important. And basically what they're saying is I'm too important. What I think about the world is so important that our friendship is lower on the food chain than what my bumper stickers say on the back of my Prius. And if that's you, so you're bad.
One other thought, listen to him whining about still Elon Musk and what led to his termination. He's in tears here.
Everything that they think about us, you were different. You didn't get angry. You weren't a victim. You didn't blame. You just did. And even in this last thing, so I can't tell you how proud it makes me to see people like you in a very public way who handle adversity and really, I think things that would shatter a lot of people to watch you do that made me very proud. I think he's a white supremacist. I think he supports the notions of white nationalism. And I think having a black man asking them questions was something he wasn't going to take.
White supremacists, people are going to take, you know, they're not going to take that lightly. They're going to go hand in hand. You're saying that Elon Musk is a white supremacist? That's harsh.
I'm saying, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck.
Great. I think those are fake tears, actually, now that I see it. I didn't see a tear. He grabbed a tissue and dabbed at his eyes. Because we have to feel sorry for Don. Because while Elon still lets him platform on X, he doesn't want to pay him the $5 million a year anymore because he got to know Don. That's why.
That was also ridiculous. It's also allergy season, so I have a little issue too. But no, I mean, it's also crazy. I mean, I'm sure Hughley believes this, but when you go around calling everybody a white supremacist, what clearly happens is that the word has no meaning. And I mean, you know, you mentioned somebody earlier in the show, Megan, who was legitimately a white supremacist, a Nazi, like all of these things that we all used to agree, like, yes, of course, this can't be platformed. If you pretend that that's the same as Elon Musk, you're really helping out the Nazis. You're really doing them an enormous favor.
That's exactly right. And yet they do it all the time. Right, Stu? It's like, Dave's right. It goes in one ear and out the other now. And then you have to really pay attention to see, wait, who's genuinely bad? Because we've all been lumped into this crew now.
Yeah, it doesn't help. It doesn't help people who are actual victims of racism. And, you know, I don't know. Don Lemon losing his $5 million a year is not something I'm going to cry about.
It's white supremacy.
Yeah, it's white supremacy. People were saying like, oh, he lost his job because of a conflict-filled interview with Elon Musk. No, Elon Musk just said, this is a dumb interview. These questions are dumb. And he just had no place for that. Why am I going to pay somebody to say dumb things on my platform?
And I'm not going to send you to outer space. And I'm not going to let you be in charge of news content on X. And as I point out, he's basically opinion was, I've gotten to know you. It's a no. Stu and Dave, stay with us. All the hard news is yet to come. Don't go away.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Tonight is the big final in the men's NCAA championship. It's going to be Purdue versus UConn. Go UConn. I had them winning and I still have them winning in my bracket. I have to say, I don't know if you watched the semifinal game, UConn versus Alabama, but it was unbelievable. It was like these guys look like wizards out there. They were superhuman. UConn, and there were a couple players on Alabama who, I mean, even to like a non-sports person like yours truly, I just, my jaw was on the floor watching their amazing athleticism. So very, very impressive. I don't know Purdue, although I understand they have like a giant on their team, like a 7'6" guy. Does anybody have UConn winning it tonight?
I think UConn will win. Yeah, I think, I mean, they, honestly, their run is
historic.
But did
you call it in your bracket? If you're a Johnny come lately, I don't care.
I think I had Marquette. I think I had Marquette. I think UConn's going to lose tonight. No, I did watch the Alabama game, and I thought that, like, I thought they seemed, for the first time to me, they seemed somewhat beatable. So we'll see.
That's crazy talk. I say this not only because I'm from Connecticut, but because they look like superhumans out there. I can't imagine anybody beating them, but I don't know Purdue, and I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to sports. So take it all with a hefty grain of salt. Anyway, I mean,
they're
really
Boilermakers. It's not easy to make a boiler. I don't know if you've ever made a boiler.
That's
not
their
an
mascot?
Easy thing. Yeah, they're the Boilermakers, which is what's UConn? The Huskies?
Purdue is the Boilermakers?
Boilermakers, yeah.
I don't even know what that is. I don't get it.
Guy who makes boilers.
Actual boils? Boilers? I mean, not boils.
I mean, I would imagine, yeah. I'm sure one of your listeners
I guess those are trains. I don't know.
Right?
What are they thinking?
Boilermakers.
Old school trains. Mike Paco, thank you, our audio engineer. Okay, in any event, I think it's going to be UConn. But you know what? I'll bet you $10, Dave, and we'll come back and we'll redo it when we get the results. Did you watch the women's final?
No, but wait a minute. There's odds on this game, Megan.
What are they?
I don't know.
I don't know how this works. I don't bet on sporting events. Horse races, yes. Will you tell me what we're betting and I'm in because I'm
no $10
all on UConn.
That's all. It's all.
Okay.
That's all.
And we'll go along with whatever the
I watched the women and it was a foul. I don't know, Stu. Did you see that play? I thought it was a foul.
It was a foul. You're talking the Final Four game with Iowa. Yes, that was a foul. I agree.
But
when you
in the finals,
it
was Iowa versus South Carolina.
Oh, South Carolina. Yeah, that I didn't watch.
And Iowa has Caitlin Clark, who's become this huge star. She's amazing, and she's getting all this attention. And some nasty press reporters are upset about it. We read a piece on Friday with this woman saying, the face of women's basketball has been black, and it needs to stay black. Okay, racist. She's getting a lot of hate from people like that. Of course, Jemele Hill has weighed in. Like, a lot of people taking shots at her. Lynette Woodward, who I didn't know, I confess I'm not a big WNBA or NBA person, but she came out to say her own scoring record stands despite Caitlin Clark beating it because I guess they didn't have three-pointers when she was playing, which is just ridiculous. Here she is in shot six.
I don't think my record has been broken because you can't duplicate what you're not duplicating. And So unless you come with a men's basketball and a two-point shot, hey, you know. But just for you, so you can understand, so you can help me spread that word.
What is that? Talk about ungracious.
And Sid Luckman was the greatest quarterback of all time because after him, they had face masks. I mean, like, ridiculous. Like, yeah, the sport changes, right?
Well, it's like Jimmy Connor, you know, or yeah. John McEnroe.
Wooden
like,
rackets.
Their little tennis rackets were about this big.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's weird because, I mean, you know, I grew up in Connecticut around the time that UConn became like a national powerhouse in both men's and women's basketball. And it was sort of a thing that entire time that people like were demanding your attention for women's basketball. It was almost like this thing where you had to get into it because there was equality and you had to recognize the wonderful greatness of these athletes. And of course they do great, amazing things and are great female basketball players. But like Caitlin Clark has done a totally different thing. She's captured the entire attention of the nation. I never in my life would I imagine that I cared more about the women's basketball Final Four than the men's. And that is exactly where I was this year because of her, solely because mm-hmm. of her. She has changed. I mean, because she's an incredibly amazing player. It has nothing to do with her personality. It has nothing to do with anything. It's just that she's completely changing the sport and doing things that are out of this world. She's pulling up for shots that are as long or longer than Steph Curry and Dame Lillard in the NBA. She's doing amazing things. And because of that, people are engaged in it. And it is fascinating to watch these old school players. And of course, you'll always have these lines, you know, 3-point lines of rule change. It's not like some of these dumb racial complaints. I understand the criticism or at least the delineation there. There's something to be said for that, I suppose. But like at the end of the day, these rules change, sports evolve. You know, LeBron James made a lot more 3-pointers than Michael Jordan was. I don't think anybody believes that Jordan couldn't have made a lot of threes if that was the game style of the time. But at the end of the day, though, this is the thing that women's sports has been hoping for and praying for forever, for people who are just sports fans to watch it just for the sport, not because they're guilted into it. She's done this by herself. And she's getting hate for it. It's insane.
Honestly, I think the words you're looking for are thank you. Those are the words you're looking for. Thank you. That's what you should be saying to Caitlin. To his credit, LeBron James tweeted out in support of her as follows. If you don't rock with Caitlin Clark game, you're just a flat out hater. Stay far away from them people, please. Right on.
You sound very natural reading LeBron James tweets, Megan. I don't know if anyone's ever told you that before.
Was that a cold read or did you spend time with that?
It was a cold read. I'm going to have to work on my... You know, I too am an actor now, Dave. You're not the only actor on this set.
Right.
I'm starring in a cartoon. I've been talking to the audience.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, you showed us. Yeah. That's awesome.
My acting chops. So
not get crazy here, though, people? There is a ceiling for women's sports. All right. Like, I was hanging out recently with MK Hammer. Right. And she's apparently a very good athlete. Right? And I said, MK, this is going to sound horrible. And I'm a big soccer fan, but it's just like women's soccer is just unwatchable. It's just bad. It's slow. It just takes forever. And she looked at me and she said, Dave, you're right. So there's a ceiling here, to her credit, right? And I'm sure that when she was on the field, it felt much more exciting. But there is a ceiling here, and I think that we all have to stop pretending that the WNBA is ever going to be the NBA.
It's not going to be. But I will defend women's soccer. The only thing I don't like about women's soccer is Megan Rapinoe and her ilk. I'm sick of these woke moralizers out there wearing our team jersey, bashing on America. By the way, Megan Rapinoe's back at it on the wrong side of issues. I'll get to that in a bit. But look, I'll tell you this. We watch girls soccer all the time because my daughter's a soccer player and it's awesome. It's fast and it's exciting and they're gunners.
That's not the same.
I don't know women's soccer well enough to defend it, you know, the way in response to what you just said.
Didn't the 15-year-old boys team of like Dallas FC like beat the women's national team?
Well, that's a question about whether they're as good as the men. That's a question about whether they're as good as and, you know, as exciting as the men.
Right. But exciting.
That's different
than
they're just not exciting in their own right.
They need to play on a smaller field because there's times that I watch women's soccer when there's like a long pass and like the ball stops. The ball should never stop.
You're watching the wrong game. No, I'm telling you, my 12-year-old's players can get it down the field. All right. Okay. So I want to say something else on the women's finals. The coach of the South Carolina team, which was victorious, is named Dawn Staley. And apparently she's a legend in women's basketball. Now she's coaching. And to his credit, Dan Zakshewski, he's over at Outkick Sports, got up before that game and put the question to both coaches, the one for Iowa punted, and the one Dawn, who was coaching South Carolina, answered it as follows. Listen to the Q&A here.
One of the major issues facing women's sports right now is the debate, discussion topic about the inclusion of transgender athletes, biological males, in women's sports. I was wondering if you would tell me your position on that issue.
Yeah, take a long break.
Damn, you got deep on me, then. I'm under the opinion of if you're a woman, you should play. If you consider yourself a woman and you want to play sports or vice versa, you should be able to play. So now the barnstorm of people are going to flood my timeline and be a distraction to me on one of the biggest days of our game. And I'm okay with that. I really am.
Unbelievable. Complete turncoat to womankind. She gets out there. She gets to the position of power. She gets all of her accolades and awards and all of this fawning praise and money. And when she has a chance to do something for women coming up behind her, she pulls up the ladder and says, play against the men. That's what she just did there. And you've got these lefties all over, like Megan Rapinoe, calling her a national treasure, an ally, a revolutionary, because she's just as guilty. There's this columnist over at USA Today Sports, Nancy Armour, who's a repeat violator of women's rights. She can't find the female athlete she wants to protect, who also tweeted out, Dawn Staley is a goddamn national treasure. You're a goddamn national disgrace, madam, because you have a pen in a very large newspaper, dwindling, though, by the day. And you, too, could stand up for women, but you're too cowardly to do it. And you know why? You're not a mother. You don't have to worry about your daughter having to face some 6'4" man out on the basketball court like I do. So I don't want to hear from you. Dawn Armour, or Nancy Armour's bio, calls herself a proud aunt of three boys. So she doesn't even have nieces. And she says, I don't have all the answers, but I'm always looking for more of them. I've got one for you, Nancy. Shut the fuck up until you know what you're talking about. Because girls are getting hurt by male basketball players posing as girls. I take you out to Massachusetts, where Lowell was playing in a game. The Lowell school was playing in a game, and they had to call it at the half because three players got hurt. Look at this girl in the black shirt go down. That's a man pretending to be a girl who took the ball from her. Look at her. You watch this, Nancy, Dawn. You two watch this. Look at her, writhing in pain after she was injured by a boy pretending to be a girl, trying to get up. She can't. She's so hurt. Three total got hurt. They called the game. It's happening over and over and over and over. I'm so sick of these women who are so terrified of the woke mob or trying to shore up their own bona fides with this crowd, afraid to say what they know is right, which is it's not safe and it's not fair. And I have a daughter who played basketball just weeks ago. And the thought of her going up against a biological man on that court is terrifying. She would be in danger. But because this legend, Dawn, decides to look woke and empathetic, she's endangered her and all the other girls who play in this sport. We've had this discussion before, you guys. I just get so fired up about it because not even a nod toward the issues that biological girls will face if this does get permitted. And by the way, it's technically okay right now. In the NCAA. Dave, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, look, there actually was a nod, right? It was a silent nod. It was the 17 and a half minutes that it took Dawn Staley to answer the question between
sips of water, right? Because she knows how abjectly absurd this is. Everybody involved in the conversation knows how abjectly absurd it is. You show that video, or you show the picture of Leah Thomas towering over, you know, the women who she just beat in a swimming event. You know, you can't convince the American people that this is normal or this is okay. Right now, Dawn Staley doesn't have to deal with it, right? I guarantee you, Megan, had 20 minutes later, Iowa decided, you know what, we're going to start the center from the men's basketball team. Because lo and behold, he suddenly just decided he's a woman. I bet Dawn Staley would have had a problem with that, right? Until people are confronted with it, they're willing to say, oh, well, it's none of your business. What's the difference? You go back to the germ of the whole trans issue, and that was the number one argument. The number one argument was, come on, guys, this is 0.000% of the population. It doesn't have any impact on your life. Well, that changed because there's women's prisons, there's women's shelters, there's women's sports, there's actual public policy at stake here. And so Dawn Staley's a coward. She proved herself to be a coward. And what else is new?
She is a coward. I'm sorry. She's a coward. You're right. This isn't her first foray into the social justice wars. And we've seen the evidence of it in the past, too. She was in 2021. She was behind her team. I had no problem with them taking the knee when we played the national anthem. I think we've got video of it. Stand by. That's her team all squatting down. The reason the national anthem was playing, all coaches stood. She thought it was fine. She's tweeted out quite a bit on the social justice wars after Jacob Blake had his run-in with cops in Wisconsin, where he pulled a knife on them and then wound up shot. She said the reporting was she hopped on Zoom calls with local reporters, knowing she was the only prominent Black coach at South Carolina to speak about Jacob Blake. She tweeted past ridiculous, with yet another Black man shot by cops in front of our very eyes. How many more before we see this end? I'm all for canceling all things sports to focus on this matter. #BLM. When a disgruntled fan claimed to be done with Staley after her support of Jacob Blake, she vowed to be herself. Take it, leave it. I'll leave it, madam. I'll leave it, because you're coming at these issues from a place of over emotionality and not facts.
And the facts are what is important, right? We're supposed to care and protect our daughters. That's supposed to be something obvious. My son is 12 years old and plays a lot of sports. The biggest, strongest kid on his baseball team also plays football. And last year, while playing tackle football, he broke his back in a game. 12 years old. Now, thankfully, he is fully recovered. But he's a really strong kid, a big kid. And you think about this type of thing when you're talking about a sport where contact is involved, and in basketball, it is. It's a part of the game. You put up girls against boys in that realm, like really bad things can happen. We should be doing everything we can to protect women. And a lot of people would think, well, football is a different thing. It's a physical sport. And it's true. But why do you think it's a different thing? If there's no difference between these genders, if there's no problem with this, why wouldn't you want your daughter playing football with a bunch of boys? You wouldn't, because it's insane. It's obviously insane. And you watch this and you can't believe people come to these conclusions. And I will say on her answer in particular, if it's taking you that long to answer, there's a reason for it. You know what there's some line you're trying to walk. Honestly, if it takes that long, that was about the most egregious example I've ever seen. If it takes you that long to answer a question, the only thing you should do at that point is fake a medical condition. Just like act like you're about to faint and then fall over. It's your only way out of it.
Well, here's how the other coach, the coach of Iowa, responded, which in defense of Dawn Staley, the other coach went second. So it was probably easier, right? Because she was conferring with her team. Holy shit, they're going to ask me that question. Here's how she answered.
Well, thank you for the question. You know, I understand it's a topic that people are interested in. But today, my focus is on the game tomorrow, my players. It's an important game we have tomorrow, and that's what I want to be here to talk about. But I know it's an important issue for another time.
Better. By the way, it wasn't just Lynn, Massachusetts, where, you know, a foot tall male tried to play against girls. And in that particular instance, I told you three girls got hurt. In San Francisco, we just saw this at Waldorf High School. The captain of the girls team, a boy, Henry, competed in girls sports for at least the last 3 years, ranked number 4 in scoring in the North Coast section of California with an average of 20.8 points per game, and at a January game scored 26 points, towering over the girls. Dawn Staley wants a whole lot more of it. I don't want my kid having anything to do with that NCAA or women's NBA. It's wrong. It's wrong on just so many levels, and more of us need to say it. Okay, let's get to some harder news. It's like, so we've done the show in reverse today. Normally we do like some hard news, then more culture. But Trump weighs in big with his stance on abortion. He teased that this was coming last night. And look, I don't really see any change in Trump's positions all along. You know, he's never been some diehard social conservative. He never kind of claimed otherwise, but he's come out now to try to thread the needle on abortion. The three of us have talked about this issue too, and whether the Republicans need to get more realistic on their messaging if they want to win elections. That seems to be where Trump landed. He is getting blowback from the left and the right on this, which probably means he's doing it right. But you tell me, here's a bit of Trump on the issue.
The Republican Party should always be on the side of the miracle of life and the side of mothers, father, their beautiful babies. And that's what we are. IVF is an important part of that. And our great Republican Party will always be with you. It must be remembered that the Democrats are the radical ones on this position because they support abortion up to and even beyond the 9th month. My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state. Like Ronald Reagan, I am strongly in favor of exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. You must follow your heart on this issue, but remember, you must also win elections to restore our culture and, in fact, to save our country, which is currently and very sadly a nation in decline. Always go by your heart, but we must win. We have to win.
Mm-hmm. There it is at the end. But as I say, blowback from both sides. I'll give you just an example. Our friend Allie Beth Stuckey, who is very Christian conservative, responds, weak statement. That is a signal for independents who will never vote for him anyway. She writes, IVF involves eugenics, the indefinite freezing of embryos, and the mass discarding of embryos, because he also defended IVF. Babies conceived via rape and incest are just as much babies as any other. Why do they deserve the death penalty for the circumstances of their conception? This simply is not a pro-life statement. And then the left is freaking out that he acknowledges his role in getting Roe overturned. So, Stu, what do you make of the statement?
I mean, I think it's an appropriate pragmatic statement for the politics of today. I mean, it's kind of what the Supreme Court said. There was rumors of him just, you know, thinking about a 14 to 16 week ban rolled out nationally, which I don't think makes much sense. First of all, it only would stop about 5% of abortions anyway. So it's not going to please the pro-life side. I think it would give people an excuse to never address the issue again. And that's why it would scare me as someone who is pro-life. Constitutionally, I would prefer it to be, there'd be a constitutional amendment to prevent it. That's my position. But my position is not very, very popular. And so him thinking as a politician, I can see why pragmatically it would make more sense. This is what the Supreme Court said. I think there are some Supreme Court issues with the idea of a national ban, particularly of how they explained in that ruling what they believed the role of the states were. I don't think that necessarily passing a ban like that would even pass constitutional muster. I think an amendment would be something I would definitely support, but that's not something Donald Trump, I think, feels in his heart. He has a record for pro-lifers that I think you'd have to be proud of as a pro-lifer. I never thought I would see the day that Roe versus Wade was overturned. And the fact that that happened, he deserves a significant amount of credit for. But you're right. It's never been his hardcore position. He's not an ideologue on this. This is something that I think he believes the pro-life cause is the right side. But he is, I think, more concerned with being elected right now. And that was the tone of the statement. I think it's probably good for the next year of politics. I don't think it's the right moral stance long term, but I agree with Ali on some of what she said there. But I do think when it comes down to where he should stand, the choice is being between a pushing for a 14-week ban, which while it polls really well, I mean, that polls really well. 60, 70, 80% of Americans agree with it when you ask them in outside of politics whether they want to ban at that age or that gestation. But still, like when it comes down to politics, that's not where the country is right now. And of course, we see in election after election, this is what the Democrats are targeting the right with. They are trying to win elections based on this. If they've had some success doing it, I think he's trying to sidestep it.
You know, Dave, Paul Sperry, who writes for Real Clear Politics, does investigations over there, tweeted out the following. Barring a black swan event, the two biggest game changers this election will be RFK Jr. on the ballot and abortion on the ballot. The Democrats have a good one here. They got a live one. And it is driving their base to turn out. We've seen that in every single election, whether it's special or midterm, after Dobbs, which overruled Roe. I mean, I think Trump, whatever you say about Trump, he's got political acumen in spades. And I think he sees this. He sees this coming at him. RFK Jr. on the ballot helps Trump. Abortion does not.
Yeah, look, I think that this is the right move from Trump. I'm very sympathetic to everything that Ali Beth said. As a pro-life Catholic, I think that every abortion is the horrific ending of a human life, right? But I almost view abortion in a sense in the way that I view racism, in that you can only legislate it up to a point. Right. There's a point at which you can say, like, OK, you can't have overt discrimination. There's things you can do. But ultimately, for a society to overcome racism, the law can't do that. The society has to do it. People have to decide, no, this is not acceptable. This is irrational. This is bad. That's where our society has to arrive at in abortion. And I think that's the Trump's state by state approach actually kind of offers an opportunity here, in that states can be laboratories, right? There are going to be red states where it's going to be very difficult to obtain an abortion. It is going to be the responsibility of the people in those states to figure out, what do we do with these moms? What do we do with these kids? How are we going to make this work? And if we're able to do that in red states, if we're able to create a reasonable path forward, I think that has the opportunity to do a lot more to save lives and to limit abortion than these sort of like very online or very on TV political fights.
Mm-hmm. I think he had to do it. And he says over and over and there, we must win. We must win. We must win. And it's fine to stand on principle from the sidelines while the Democrats take over everything, the White House, the Senate, and the House. What's going to happen to the unborn babies then? What's going to happen to all life issues then? Trump's thinking strategically, and that's what one must do in order to win elections, not just the presidency, but the Senate, which controls the Supreme Court confirmations, and beyond. So that's just a reality of governing. People need to understand that. On the subject of RFKJ, you know, I never know how to pronounce his name. Cenk Uygur. How do you pronounce his name?
Is that
how you
say it? Right, isn't it? I think it's Cenk.
Cenk. Cenk. Okay. Mm-hmm. Forgive me. I've seen it written a million times, but I've rarely heard it pronounced. I actually watch his show. But he's a voice on the left that makes a lot of noise. And sometimes I agree with the guy and sometimes I don't. He has come out to say, and he did sort of like a fig leaf run for president where he knew he couldn't win. He was born in Turkey. So we don't allow people not born in the United States to run for president, but he was trying to make a point about Joe Biden. Didn't go anywhere. And now he's come out and said he's actually considering voting for RFKJ. Listen here.
The headlines are wrong. He didn't say that Biden is definitely a bigger threat. He said he could make an argument for that. He's right to be concerned about Biden being a threat to democracy himself. So they love to rig elections. Yes, I use the word rigged. Okay, so you can go cry about it if you're mainstream media. How about you do your job and talk about how they canceled the election in Florida in the primary and just declared Biden the winner? So if you're gonna make the argument that you're a champion of democracy, you should probably try it in your own primaries. For the first time today, I'm now considering RFK Jr.
So he's not alone. He's not alone. There was a fair amount of talk about RFKJ online. Some saying, okay, I know it's anecdotal, but, you know, like a lot of my friends are voting for him. More and more people are considering him. People who just can't pull the lever for Trump. People who have had it with this Democrat Party. I don't think the guy has any real chance of actually, you know, winning. But the point is, he really could be a massive spoiler, in particular for the Democrats, as Paul Sperry points out, this fall. And I think while the Democrats really hoped he would have faded into obscurity by now, he hasn't. He's still running at over, well, like 11% and getting on the ballot. Now that he's named as vice president, he can get on the ballot in even more of the swing states. And that's all it takes. That would tip the election by all these polls, Stu, to Trump.
Yeah, I think there was a question about that going in. I mean, obviously, RFK Jr. played a lot toward the right when he was actually in the Democratic primary. He was trying to separate himself, I think, from Biden. And of course, his views have come, certainly his COVID views in particular, were very popular among conservative voters. So there's some question going in. He was going on conservative podcasts. He was all over conservative media. And there's a question going in who he would hurt more. I mean, I've looked at now dozens and dozens and dozens of polls. I think the answer is he hurts Biden more, at least right now, unless something changes. It's not a complete blow away in that. Sometimes I think you can see equal pull from both sides. But generally speaking, I think it's affecting Biden more. And I think that's appropriate. Are there conservative voters I know who sound a little bit like Jenk or Sink, whatever his name is, who think, you know, I'm not
Jenk. Jenk Uger. You pronounce it Jenk Uger. With apologies to right. Mr. Uger, because I've been butchering it here. Go ahead.
I've been doing it for multiple years. Don't worry. But yeah, Jenk Uger, a lot of people I've talked to on the conservative side sound a little bit like him. Like, I'm not, you know, maybe they're not the biggest Trump fan. And they think, well, I like what RFK Jr. said about COVID and vaccine mandates. And I like what he sort of found a newfound border hawk inside of him, which I'm highly skeptical of. But like, when you look at RFK Jr.'s viewpoints overall, this is a man who went on stage in front of hundreds of thousands of people and said that Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck should be tried for treason because of their climate views.
Oh, RFKJ?
RFKJ did this.
Yeah.
This is and we all know what the Constitution calls for when it comes to a treason punishment. The punishment is death. This is a person who would absolutely love to control every single aspect of your life when it comes to what kind of energy you use, what kind of car you buy. He is an absolute extremist on this stuff. And most of his views line up to what we would call an old school liberal, someone from back in the day. One of the reasons why the right has affinity to him right now is because a lot of people on the right oppose, for example, funding Ukraine. And RFK Jr. has not bought into the new Democratic alignment where now we're supposed to fund all these foreign wars. He's that old school Democrat. And that's why I think he appeals to a lot of people on the left. And I think he will hurt Biden more. He does have his overall policy set is absolutely very, very liberal. And I think conservative voters should be very wary of falling in love with one or two of his somewhat newfound views that appeal to the right. He is an absolute dyed-in-the-wool liberal going back many, many years. And that's not going to change. If he gets in power, he is not going to, he's not going to win, as you point out. But no, if he were to win, he would not hesitate to use the power of that office in ways you would not like.
But as a spoiler who pulls votes from Biden, if you don't want a second Biden term, you got to be feeling pretty good about his presence in this race and the fact that it's sustaining and he's going to get on more ballots in more swing states. And people like Jenk are migrating over to him because they've had it with the Democratic Party. I got to take a quick break and we're going to come back. We're going to talk about what's happening with Trump's VP pick. Don't go away.
I'm Megyn Kelly, host of The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM. It's your home for open, honest, and provocative conversations with the most interesting and important political, legal, and cultural figures today. You can catch The Megyn Kelly Show on Triumph, a Sirius XM channel featuring lots of hosts you may know and probably love. Great people like Dr. Laura, Glenn Beck, Nancy Grace,
Dave Ramsey, and yours truly, Megyn Kelly. You can stream The Megyn Kelly Show on SiriusXM at home or anywhere you are. No car required. I do it all the time. I love the SiriusXM app. It has ad-free music, coverage of every major sport, comedy, talk, podcast, and more. Subscribe now. Get your first 3 months for free.
Go to SiriusXM.com/MKShow to subscribe and get 3 months free. That's SiriusXM.com/MKShow and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
So the speculation over Trump's VP pick continues, and it's starting to get a little louder. Politico has a piece out today saying the campaign has already hired an outside firm to vet candidates and prepare research documents. The names under consideration continue to be in flux, according to multiple people familiar with the list, who describe it as being in pencil, not in pen. He's going to draw this out apprentice style. That sounds like Trump. Senator Tommy Tuberville, Republican from Alabama, says, all I can tell you is if you're hearing any names, it ain't going to be them. It's all propaganda. But for what it's worth, Politico says, said to be on the list, number one, well, not in any particular order, but it listed in this order in Politico, Tim Scott, Kristi Noem, Byron Donalds, Elise Stefanik, Tulsi Gabbard, J.D. Vance, Katie Britt, Marco Rubio, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and Doug Burgum. And, there was reporting over on Morning Wire where Dave Marcus also reports around Tim Scott being perhaps receiving more weight than those others, Dave. So what do you think? Do you think Tim Scott does have a better chance, or do you think it's in the Tuberville camp of if you're hearing a name, it ain't going to be them?
I stand with Morning Wire. No, I do. I don't know if that was Cabot. I don't know who that was. If it was Cabot, I didn't catch it.
Was it Megan Basham?
Megan, yeah. Well, look, Megan's very often right. I think Tim Scott makes lots of sense for very obvious reasons that people have talked about quite a bit. Personally, I think Rubio is a guy who to me makes the most sense. I think that, you know, what's the line in Rocky? You know that they fill gaps with each other. I feel like Rubio fills some of those gaps in a way. It's somewhat similar to Pence, although Rubio's a little more sort of foreign policy. That's where I think Rubio helps him. But listen, I think it could be any of those people. I think it probably doesn't matter much in terms of how the election plays out. I think it matters an awful lot in terms of the future of the Republican Party, though. And I think that either a Tim Scott or a Marco Rubio might be a little scary to the hardcore MAGA people who want to keep Trump's circle very small, who want to keep everybody else out. I think either of those choices would sort of open Trump world in a way that they wouldn't be completely comfortable with, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but now the problem with Rubio is if this is a tight election, it can't be Rubio because they're both from Florida. It's this thing with the 12th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which says that electors cannot vote for both a president and vice president from their own state. Taken at face value, quoting here from a Miami Herald piece explaining it, that would prevent Florida's 30 presidential electors from voting for a hypothetical Trump-Rubio ticket. And there's no way in which Trump can lose the electoral votes of Florida. I mean, it would take quite the landslide. That's not a risk he's likely to take. And neither man is likely to leave Florida before November. So, as you know, their home state. So, anyway,
I mean, if they're talking about him, though, they've got to have some way of. I mean, you know, Trump moves back to New York. Not with Letitia James is the
or he's being sued in criminal and civil court at every turn. I don't know if he wants to go back there, but. Yeah. Is Rubio that important to Trump? I don't know. Go ahead, Stu.
Yeah. He's got buildings all over the country. He could theoretically move. I mean, Cheney did this back with Bush back in the day because he wound up going to Wyoming to make this happen. It can be done. I'm with you, though. I'm not really convinced that. I don't know. It doesn't seem like It would be an interesting move. I mean, I think the base at this point seems very anti, as I was mentioning before, like the Ukraine war and funding Ukraine, where, you know, Rubio's pretty aggressive on that front. They would disagree, I think, on foreign policy a decent amount. It's interesting, too. I think, like, I was thinking about this from Trump's perspective. I think to him, the vice president is basically meaningless, right? Like, it's him. He's the president of the United States. He's Donald Trump. He's making these decisions. I think he thinks of someone that might be able to help him on the fringes. But if you think about after going through what he went through in 2020, to me, I think the most important thing to him would be someone that in a moment like that would not find some sort of constitutional conscience that would prevent him from taking the steps that he believes are right. Now, forget what you think about 2020 and all the stuff that went on. I tend to think that Mike Pence did very much the right thing back then.
Same.
But I don't, you know, Donald Trump doesn't. I would think that anyone he believes is going to stand up to him in a moment like that is off the table immediately. And I don't know. I would argue probably Rubio would fall into that. You know, people have brought up Kristi Noem, which I think is an interesting person, because Kristi is someone who's backed Trump from the beginning, backed most of the stuff he said publicly, right out of central casting, which is what Donald Trump says all the time. And also is someone who is, while she is smart and an interesting figure, is not particularly like electric as a speaker, not someone who's like a Vivek Ramaswamy, who might be someone who's going to take a lot of attention away from Trump. I think Trump wants someone
who's
going to...
not mentioned on this list. Kristi Noem, right. As you point out, central casting, she is very popular, governor of South Dakota. She's also very attractive, and Trump does care. He does. He basically sees people as, you know, what number are you on the 1 through 10 scale? And I mean, I'm not going to say who, but I know somebody who went to the White House for a visit, and this person was there with their wife, and Trump said to the husband, "Your wife's A," and gave her a number, gave the guy's wife Trump's number. Okay, so he cares. He cares about attractiveness, which the audience can make up their own minds whether that rules in or out the list I just read. Keep going, Stu. I interrupted you.
No, I think that is part of the equation. Look, Trump, of course, recognizes, as you mentioned, with his apprentice sort of rollout of this, he recognizes the drama of these moments. He recognizes these are television moments at some point. And I think he wants someone who is competent, that God forbid if something happened to him, they would be able to do the job. You know, Mike Pence certainly fell into that. But, you know, I think his calculation here has to be somebody he thinks it would line up with him in one of those moments. There's a lot of, you know, like Ted Cruz has been mentioned. Cruz is an interesting guy. I think he'd be a very good defender of Donald Trump. He's obviously very, very smart, does a lot of things well. I don't know that he's particularly as well liked as nationally as I prefer his policies to be. But I think at the end of the day, Ted Cruz loves the Constitution. He can recite it from memory. I don't think that's the type of person he wants there. I think he wants someone who's going to see his way on these in these big moments. Kristi Noem, I think, falls into that category, and she kind of checks all the boxes. So that would be an interesting one. The other one too, we always talk about vilifying the sort of identity politics thing, and Donald Trump famously, you know, says he doesn't care about this. I'm fascinated by how many of the candidates kind of fall into this. Well, it's got to be either a woman or a person of color or whatever. One of the people that I think makes a lot of sense for him is J.D. Vance. Vance is kind of an intellectual when it comes to this sort of Trumpian view. He's a vigorous defender of his policies.
And he's famous.
Good on television.
He's going to like
he's
that.
He's famous.
Trump likes famous
he knows
people.
Media. He knows how to do television. He'd be good in a debate.
He's
I mean, there's
got
a lot there.
An amazing story. Amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, go back and read his book, Hillbilly Elegy. Is it Elegy? Yeah.
Yeah.
I always screw that word up. And I read that book cover to cover. And I've said to the audience before, my favorite interview I've ever done was of J.D. Vance in depth at NBC. We met his whole family. We had a heartfelt interview with, of course, J.D., but also his sister, Lindsay, who he absolutely adores and who adores him. Their bond. Go ahead. Just Google it. Go YouTube, Megyn Kelly, J.D. Vance, NBC. And it will be well worth your time. You will fall in love with this guy. He's a special person. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I think I'm going to push back on Stu a little bit. I think that Vance is too isolationist, too anti-Ukraine funding, too much of a bunker America type for Trump, who, you know, it was because I was going to ask you, Stu, like when you said that Rubio is more pro-Ukraine, and so they would, you said they would disagree about that. I was curious if you meant by they, Trump and Rubio, or those strong MAGA types, because I absolutely agree that the strong MAGA types are going to disagree. Donald Trump is by no stretch of the imagination come out against Ukraine at all.
It's true.
I mean, not even a little bit.
Which is so fascinating.
I think that he's sort of backed off of it. But so did you mean Trump himself, or did you mean more of the base there? Well, or
I mean the big MAGA type is definitely what I believed. I also don't think Trump really cares, frankly, about what they think. I think he thinks I'm Donald Trump and they're going to like what I like. And
yeah,
but
Johnson's probably going to put Ukraine aid on the floor this week. Right. Mm-hmm. Is Donald Trump going to go say, like, vote no on Ukraine aid? J.D. Vance sure as hell is.
Oh, yeah, he definitely will.
Right. Definitely will. Mm-hmm. I don't know that Donald Trump's going to do that. He hasn't so far. I mean, so far, Trump's answer to Ukraine is get me in a room with them. I'll figure it out.
Right.
He's not David Sacks running around saying Ukraine can't win. Take what you can right now. Give up. I mean, that has not been the Trumpian approach to Ukraine.
It's been fascinating. You know, we deal with people all the time that are calling. A lot of them are, you know, on the radio show, and a lot of them are big Trump supporters. Many of them do not agree at all with Ukraine funding, and it's the biggest issue for them. And it's like when you remind them that what Donald Trump's position on this has been is if they don't come up with a deal immediately, I will give more weapons to Ukraine than has ever been seen. That has actually been his stated position on this. But, you know, this is the same thing I would say with the vaccines, where, like, you know, a lot of people are really skeptical of the vaccines. They think it's the worst thing in the world. They think it's, I mean, I get people who, you know, call in and they're saying that, you know, this is like one of the worst things that's ever happened to humanity. But I'm voting for Donald Trump, the guy who started Operation Warp Speed. He seems to be able to have this magic trick with people. They don't care, frankly, what these positions are. They believe in him. They believe he's the right guy for this time. So that's one of the big reasons why I just don't think his opinion or the way he's thinking about vice president is something where he's like rolling this into, oh, well, I mean, it's a crucial choice. It's going to make the difference. I think he believes he's the guy that's going to make the difference. This is a secondary concern for him. He doesn't want someone who's going to get in the way.
Yep. That makes sense.
I think Doug Burgum's an interesting name to see on there. Of course, it's like another evil white man, according to our earlier soundbite, but he's a brilliant guy. He's a billionaire like Trump. And, you know, the economy remains one of the top issues for all voters on all sides. So Trump could make a good argument about him. If he wants to go identity politics, he's got plenty of choices here. I don't know. I think Katie Britt was an option before State of the Union response. I think she has selected herself off of the list as an old boss.
I heard she's auditioning for Streetcar Named Desire in a local community theater, and so is not available for.
She'd be good at that.
No, she might.
I think she might be able to do that.
Stu, you were a big Doug Burgum guy, right? I remember Stu on the radio.
Burgum
always saying, like, if only they don't, you never talk about Burgum, right?
Is that
what you said? No. You never talk.
Largely a joke. I think he actually has a really good record as governor in some ways. Like, you know, certainly economically, I don't see him, though. Like, you're right, Megan. He matches up. Trump respects other people who have made a lot of money, and there's some reason. Like, I could see him as your Secretary of Interior or something, but
he's got cabinet secretary written all over him.
Yes, he does. Number one, he's not exactly an electric speaker. Number two, the eyebrows. I just don't think he would. I don't think it's possible for Donald Trump to name someone with those eyebrows as vice president.
They're a lot. I don't know what he's going to do. He's making inroads with the black vote, but I think that's because of policy. I don't think Republicans or black voters are into the identity politics thing. So I don't think a black VP is going to make them vote for Trump any more so. I think he's going to pick somebody, as the Trump team, the inner circle told me, somebody who he likes, somebody who he wants to be around. Who that's going to be, I don't know. But I look forward to the apprentice process. Guys, you're the best. Stu, Dave, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Megan.
Tomorrow, our pal Sage Steele returns. For now, enjoy your solar eclipse if you're in the path of totality. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to The Megyn Kelly Show. No BS, no agenda, and no fear.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.